This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Well, I think the Ghanaians are proud that she chose to go to Ghana as the first place on their four nation tour of Africa. And also, Cape Coast in particular, Cape Coast has a history. This is a place where thousands of African Americans were shipped out to the New World.
That's Professor Kwaku Muama, a professor at American University and native Ghanaian, speaking on U.S. First Lady Melania Trump's visit to Cape Coast. We'll have full details on the story coming up.
Also, Sierra Leone's President Julius Maada Bio says his administration is introducing measures to jumpstart the economy, create jobs, and reduce unemployment. And labor unions in Nigeria will resume negotiations with the government on a new minimum wage tomorrow.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story today, U.S. First Lady Melania Trump visited a former slave shipment point on Ghana's coast, describing it as a very emotional and really something that people should see and experience. On the second day of her goodwill trip to Africa, the U.S. First Lady visited the Cape Coast Castle. It is one of about 40 slave castles that European traders built in West Africa centuries ago. From this point, hundreds of thousands of Africans were shipped into slavery in the Americas. Cape Coast Castle is an iconic location for visiting dignitaries. In 2009, former U.S. President Barack Obama visited and said, as an African-American, the place represents both profound sadness as well as a source of hope. After Ghana, Mrs. Trump will visit Malawi, then travel to Kenya and Egypt. She is focusing on maternal and child welfare on this trip, as well as cultural topics. Mrs. Trump also will see how U.S. aid supports the development goals of the four nations.
Also, U.S. First Lady Melania Trump visited a former slave-holding facility in Ghana today, as Yehias mentioned, as she continues a week-long tour of Africa. Accompanied by a guide, Mrs. Trump spent several minutes in a dungeon where African slaves were held before being shipped to the Americas during the 1700s. Afterwards, she told reporters that she will never forget the stories the guide told her and said the experience was emotional. Kwaku Muama is a professor at American University here in Washington. He is also a native Ghanaian. He spoke with me about the significance of Mrs. Trump's visit to Cape Coast as well as the importance of her visit to the continent.
Well, I think the Ghanaians are proud that she chose to go to Ghana as the first place on their four-nation tour of Africa. And also, Cape Coast in particular, Cape Coast has a history. This is a place where thousands of African Americans were shipped out to the New World. And so it's a crossroads of the Old World and the New World. And it's symbolic for that purpose. The Obamas visited the site when they were in Ghana. And I think that Mrs. Trump going there as a sign of respect to the historic bond between two peoples. But it's also a place where reflection is encouraged. And it's a place where you realize how deep some of the wounds that have shaped our relationships, and it's a place where you can also reflect on the future. And so this is the perfect place to go to start the healing process.
Also, looking at her overall trip to Africa, how is it so significant for the continent that the U.S. First Lady is visiting Africa?
Well, it says that Africa does matter, even if it's in a small way. Because Africans are always wondering if the Trump administration in particular has an agenda for the continent. Up until this point, we've not been clear about the direction of the administration in terms of its policy. So the First Lady going there says that we're thinking about you, and some of the issues that you are dealing with are issues that I care about. And so if you look at her personal agenda, the deepest program, she's emphasizing on issues concerning young people. And so she goes to these places. One of the first places she visited in Ghana is the intensive care unit at the Rich Hospital where children are being treated. And she goes to Cape Coast. Cape Coast is not only a place where the slave trade happened, it's also the center of Ghana's educational infrastructure. There are a lot of schools in Ghana that are based in Cape Coast, and so it's a place where the next generation of Africans' leadership is being grown. And so going there is a way of saying, I care about things that you're doing. I care about the past, but I also care about the future. And hopefully she shines a light on some of the things that are happening in that place that's both good and the things that are not so good that require the world's attention. Maybe she brings those things up too.
That was Professor Kwaku Muama of American University speaking with me from Washington.
Sierra Leone's President Julius Maada Bio says his administration is introducing measures to jumpstart the economy, create jobs, and reduce unemployment. His remarks followed a series of meetings with American investors where he underscored the opportunities and business-friendly environment in his country. VOA's Peter Cloti recently sat down for a talk with President Maada Bio. Peter began by asking him about the economy he inherited when he was elected earlier this year.
It's been extremely difficult taking over an economy that was so battered at the time, but because we are committed, and I made a pledge to the people of the Sierra Leone that we ensure that we have efficient political and economic management of the state, I have set in motion a series of homegrown reforms to help manage the economy.
So what steps are you taking to mitigate some of the effect of having no money, public sector workers have not been paid fully well, the previous government borrowing money to pay public sector workers, heavy burden, as you call it. How are you resolving some of these challenges?
With three executive orders, I was able to start taking in some money. Domestic revenue mobilization was a serious problem because there are too many leakages in the system. So we instituted serious measures to make sure that we can take in as much as we can from internal revenue. We have also put in place reforms to make sure that all departments put their money in the consolidated fund. We are also managing expenditure. With these few, we have been able to keep running the state and to even go to the point of supporting or launching the free education program without a single cent from anywhere else around the world except in Sierra Leone.
You talked about free quality education for Sierra Leonean students. How sustainable is this? And because, you know, starting a program or a policy is easy to do. When you are not there, another president might say, okay, we don't have money to do that, so we go back to the old system. How sustainable would this policy be in your administration and years to come?
In fact, it is the flagship program project of this particular administration. What basically we are doing is to put premium on the human capital, which has been neglected for a very long time. Because when we talk about Sierra Leone, what most people think about immediately is diamonds, gold, iron ore, bauxite, rutile, you name it. What this administration is saying that there is an important asset that we have. That is the target of development, the human being. The only way to make us useful in this modern world is to have education, quality education. So what we want to do is to make sure that we lay a solid foundation, not one that is prescribed from outside, but one that is a result of our own internal brainstorming, which we have done. And if any government were to come and want to change that, I don't think you are going to be in power for too long, because the people are feeling the benefit. The kids are very happy. They are able to go to school. And we know that education is good for personal and also national development.
Mr. President, you talked about corruption. You recently established a commission to look into acts of public corruption. Now, some of your critics are saying this is a ploy by your administration to go after your predecessors. Just a witch hunt, they said. How do you respond to that?
Corruption, I have said, is a threat to national security. We are really in out of a civil war that lasted for 11 years in that country. We cannot continue to commit the same mistakes that were committed by our predecessors. We have to check corruption. And the impunity with which the leadership has been corrupt is what we want to nip in the bud now. The judicial inquiry which we have instituted is going to look at those who have been involved in acts of corruption. They are going to be supported by our own local judges to look at it in a free and fair manner. Should anybody in my administration be involved in that, he or she is going to be to have his a day in a court and account for that.
That was President Julius Maada Bio of Sierra Leone speaking with our colleague Peter Cloete here in Washington.
Labor unions in Nigeria will resume negotiations with the government on a new minimum wage tomorrow. The unions went on a three-day warning strike last week over their demands for raising the minimum wage from the current 18,000 naira a month, about $48, to 65,000 naira. Chris Onyeka is the Deputy General Secretary of the United Labor Congress of Nigeria, or ULC. He tells reporter Mike Mbonye that although the proposed wage increase is high, it is in line with economic conditions in the country.
When you look at it in absolute term, yes, it's a large, it may be a large increase. But when you look at the objective realities of the Nigerian situation, you will find out that it's not even an increase at all. When the 18,000 naira minimum wage was negotiated, it was around almost 60, about 100 and say officially, around $140 US. Okay, $140 US amounts to roughly at the current exchange rate, amounts to about 60-something, the same 60-something thousand we're talking about. So that when you factor in some of these things, you find out that there is no increase at all. But in other times, yes, it may sound like an increase. It's just a nominal increase. We have not asked for a large increase. We just want to maintain the same level of living that we had in 2011.
What has been the government response thus far?
The government, yes, has responded. They have set up the minimum wage committee, which is a tripartite process. We have all sat down and met severally. While labor has made a demand for 65,000, organized private sector also offered 45,000 naira, but unfortunately the federal government has not made any offer, and that is a problem. And suddenly they decided to abandon the table, and then we had to go on strike to call them back to the table.
What was the public response to the strike called by organized labor in Nigeria?
The public fortunately has been supportive because they know that any struggle the labor movement embarks upon is also their own struggle. So they have been very, very supportive. In fact, they were the ones that were egging us on. They wanted us to continue even beyond when we decided to stop. Because we're a responsible organization that have achieved their aim for the strike, we decided to suspend it.
Are the unions and the government likely to reach common ground on the minimum wage?
That depends on how government wants to, whether government is going to be sensitive and act more responsibly to the demands of the labor movement and understand the economic implications of the minimum wage. We are hoping that when we meet on Thursday, the government would have to make an offer, and that because trade union is a bargaining platform, we want to sit down together with them and look at what they're offering us, and then we discuss back and forth, concede, compromise, build compromises and concessions. At the end of the day, we believe that we'll work out something that will be reasonable for Nigerian workers and for Nigerian economy.
That was Chris Onyeka with the United Labor Congress of Nigeria. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye in Lagos.
When dozens of people died in ethnic clashes last month on the outskirts of Addis Ababa, Protesters took to the streets. In response, the Ethiopian government turned off the internet. Mobile internet service stayed off for about 40 hours. It was the second time this year the internet has gone down in Ethiopia during times of unrest. A months-long outage began last year during protests that led to the resignation of Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn. Officials have yet to explain this latest outage, but activists and journalists believe the typical justification to ensure public safety in turbulent times does not hold up to scrutiny. They are also concerned that the government continues to suppress information and impede journalists, even in the midst of wide-reaching reforms. The country has one of the lowest internet penetration rates in the world, but many more people have at least limited access through mobile devices.
Rwandan journalists say a new law that makes humiliating cartoons a crime will block them from reporting freely and holding officials accountable. The Ministry of Justice reflects that criticism, saying that media can report on officials without humiliating them. Eugene Uimana reports from Kigali.
The new law, Article 233, criminalizes the humiliation of government officials. Journalists say the law passed last week has a chilling effect. Bianci Samuel Becker works for the news outlets New Vision and CGTN Africa.
I think that this was meant to stop us from account some government officials. But if you tell me that this may force me to go to court or end up in prison, it will stop me from doing some stories, it will stop me from providing some information because I will be in fear of my life.
The new law comes just as journalists were welcoming the decriminalization of defamation. Edmund Kagile, a member of the Rwanda Media Commission, says that provides hope this new law also may eventually become a civil matter instead of criminal charge.
I think for us we see some progress. We see some very good progress. The fact that defamation in itself was decriminalized is a very positive step. But also this Article 233 is still an impediment. We believe it could be also, you know, removed from the penal code.
Justice Minister Johnson Businge says the new law does not prevent journalists from holding officials accountable.
Anybody who would say, now this guy who says I am corrupt is humiliating me, one, that would be a totally new thing for us to hear because we haven't had it all the years that we've been managing this. And secondly, courts are not, they do not operate like robots. When I take you to court as a media person and I say, Bianci wrote about me that I'm corrupt, I think what the court will want to find out is what was the basis of your writing.
Those found guilty of breaking the law could face up to 2 years in prison, fines of up to 1 million Rwandan francs or $1,100. Jean Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Zimbabwe's Reserve Bank is introducing a number of changes that have sparked a public outcry. This comes barely 2 years after the government introduced bond notes, a surrogate currency that was to trade at par with the U.S. dollar but only circulates within Zimbabwe. Reporter Kudzai Zanawashi has more details.
Governor John Mangujka presented the changes the central bank is initiating in their bid to subdue inflation. Under the new plan, foreign truckers would purchase fuel using foreign currency. Also, the government would take 2 cents of every dollar transacted electronically in Zimbabwe. Munyaradzi Dodo is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliament business and other political developments. He says Zimbabweans are worried.
Zimbabweans are particularly concerned about the fees that have been revised, where the government takes 2 cents per every dollar that is transacted in Zimbabwe, which is absolutely crazy. It means that for $1,000 transacted, the government would be getting $20. That has rubbed Zimbabweans the wrong way.
In the past, the government took 5 cents per transaction, regardless of the fees exchanged. The new policy follows a drop in the amount of cash circulating in the economy, and as many people compensate for the shortage by doing their banking electronically. Zimbabwe introduced bond notes to ease a cash crisis that subjected many to long queues at banking halls. While the central bank said the notes are on par with the US dollar, that has not been the case. The US dollar has been scarce, a huge demand for foreign currency by businesses who want to restock outside Zimbabwe has devalued the bond notes. It has also inspired a three-tier system where depositors can hold separate accounts for the US dollar, bond notes, and the electronic money from real-time gross settlement accounts, widely known as RTGS. Under the RTGS system, transfer of money between banks happens immediately and transactions are settled as soon as they are processed. But the system only works internally, and customer cards from Zimbabwe banks will not work outside the country. Despite the continuing difficulties, the government says banks should create local RTGS accounts and foreign accounts that can house the US dollar. And many do not believe government promises that the value of the accounts will remain the same.
Banks have been instructed to separate bank accounts into foreign currency accounts and RTGS accounts. That is really concerning because now it's not clear what that means in terms of the money that people have in their banks.
He adds that the central bank and the government have fallen short and that the bond notes have not worked. Darlington Tsozo is a shop owner in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare. He says new taxes are not progressive.
We have seen in the past, if such monetary policies are introduced, usually the consumers are the ones who will suffer. As a business owner, I see a drop in sales.
Obet Masaraure is with the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He says policies being introduced by government are making life for the average person more difficult.
The monetary policy is a clear testimony that the government is now at war with its people. For the working class, it is a double-edged sword, wherein our accounts have been transformed from foreign currency accounts to RTGS accounts, which in essence are just Zimbabwean dollar accounts.
The public outcry continues, and one wonders if the ZANU-PF government, which has pledged it is a listening government, will listen to the cries of the people this time. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Suleiman Terawali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, can Africa win the war on corruption? The African Union has declared 2018 the African Year of Anti-Corruption, charting a battle plan to win the fight against corruption on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast comes to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.